It's the 27th of February. It's a good day to be alive. It's raining and we need water, but oh well. But what we're going to do is we're going to continue with chapter 5. We've got, sorry, Lucas. This man is named Lucas Rukeyser, by the way. After class, if you want to take a look at the rest of it, he ran a show called Wall Street Week with Lucas Rukeyser for over 30 years. And it's so funny, I told you that on Tuesday, didn't I? You know, the PBS is often considered the bastion of liberalism, and this was the only show about investing for decades until CNN and all the others got into the act. So how are we doing? At least we're back above minus 3% or minus 2.9%. The one that we didn't want to buy was the one that's doing the best, and our very, very exciting and hot stock is the one that's hit us the hardest. But the others are coming back, you know, not too bad. Nobody really down that much. There's the waste management, the one that Marcus said, that's your favorite stock. No, it's not my favorite stock, but an example of the kind of stock I like, that companies are going to be around forever and a day, because somebody got to pick up the trash, right? Right, somebody's got to pick up the trash. So this is where we left off. And I want to just do, the assignment number 4 for mutual funds is due today. If you're not going to get it done today, at least tell me what's going on. Keep working every day, studying every day, because we probably won't finish chapter 5 today. We've got a couple of worksheets to work on. Have you pull out your worksheet number 1, because we're going to do number 2 on the back. And if not, we'll finish by Tuesday. And then we'll start in earnest on chapter 6, which will take us 2.5, maybe 3 sessions to do. And this is the heart of the course. So this is the dilemma. Here are the calculations, and you have to learn the calculations. They're really not that hard. Don't worry. But you have to do them. And so this is the corazon, right? This is the heart of the course. And in the meantime, chapter 5 is a tremendous amount of information on stocks. So you have to be studying the whole time that we're working on the calculations. You can't slough off. My apologies, but that's the truth. All right, so we ended here. We discussed stock spinoffs, where a company divests itself, and we talked about some of the spinoffs that actually did pretty well, like the Baby Bells, and we talked about some that didn't do very well. And so if you find a company that interests you, see if they have any history of spinoffs. See if they were spun off by themselves. And now stock splits. Stock splits get a lot of press, but they really don't amount to much of anything, folks. A stock split is nothing more than an accounting maneuver. That's why Warren Buffett of the... I spell that right? Maneuver. How are you spelling? Your spell checker will tell you. Maneuver. The company increases the number of shares. So you had one share, and now you have 2. Yippee! You had 100 shares, now you have 200. Isn't that exciting? No. What happened to the price? It went down in half. So did you really gain any value? No. There was a technological reason for splitting stocks that allowed for trading. Remember the trading of 25-25? So you didn't want to have shares that were that expensive. So as companies got larger and larger, they split their shares to make it easy to trade their shares. But that's gone now. And back in the 1960s, Warren Buffett of the company Berkshire Hathaway hated these things because he thought it was just a way for people to get excited about nothing. And so he refused to split the Berkshire Hathaway stock. It's now selling for over $169. But if Coca-Cola, if GE, if Johnson & Johnson, if these companies have been around for over 100 years, if they had not split their shares, one share would be worth $80,000, $100,000, $200,000. So there's got to be a golden mean in there somewhere. And so what companies now do, I've noticed, I don't know, you can't ask them because they won't tell you, but they have to be very careful. This is a highly regulated industry. If they come out and say, you know what, we're really excited, we think our future is really bright, you should buy our stocks. If they do that and then it doesn't work out, you know what's going to happen? The attack lawyers are going to come out. Oh, we forgot a joke. We didn't have a joke. Anybody got a good joke? Okay, let's hear it. Okay, let's hear it. We got to get it.
Would do you call a guy who never farts in public?
What do you call a guy who never fights in public? Oh! flatulates in public. A closet puffer? I don't know. Tell me.
A private tutor.
A what?
A private tutor.
A private tutor. We want good jokes. Anyway, so if a company comes out and says, you know, the future looks bright, a gentleman by the name of Harold Keller was the CEO of Southwest Airlines for decades, and he was always telling people, buy our stock. And they were saying, you can't do this. They might sue us. He goes, I don't care. We're excited about our growth. And, of course, he was right. And there is a reason why we have lawyer jokes and lawyer attack lawyers, but before lawyers we were, you know, we settled disputes with pistols at dawn. So yeah, there's a reason why we have lawyers. So companies now, for example, Qualcomm a few years ago split their stock. And I was pretty sure that they were doing it because there was no reason for them to do it. It wasn't selling for that much. They didn't need to sell it to drop it because of technological reasons so that the shares would be more affordable. They just split their shares. And I took it as a way of their saying, you know, we think things are going really well. And sure enough, the next time they came out with earnings, the earnings were really positive and the stock did well. Okay, so do you like stock splits? Big deal. Big deal. Whatever you had, you still have. You just have more shares. It's worth less. Now, sometimes there are reverse splits. When a stock price gets too low and the company's worried about the reputation, they will take 5 of your shares and issue you 1. Of course, the price will go up by 5. But there's a reason for that, which we may or may not get to later on. Treasury stock. This is shares of stock that have been sold and subsequently repurchased by the issuing firm. They're also called share buybacks. Remember the video last week where the company started buying back their shares? When they do that, those shares get put away in the treasury. They're no longer circulated. The company could reissue them, but when they do, they have to go through the process of telling the SEC, we're going to create more shares. So the idea, you students of economics, if you reduce the number of shares outstanding, if you reduce the supply and the demand doesn't change, what happens to the price? The price should go up. There's no guarantees. The logic being that after the buyback, there is less supply of outstanding stock. There are fewer shares. And now existing shareholders now have a larger percentage of the corporation. During the run-up of the 1990s, share buybacks were often seen as a better alternative to dividend increases. The belief was that investors were more interested in capital gains than dividends and that buybacks increased the potential for capital gains by reducing the supply of stock. So some companies will aggressively buy back their shares, not necessarily at the best time. The best time to buy back your shares is when the shares are beaten down and you believe your company's not going out of business. Some other companies will do it as just because the investment community is screaming and hollering at them. You might have heard of a gentleman by the name of Carl Icahn. If you have, great. If you haven't, that's all right. But he's called an activist investor. And he will buy, he's got a lot of money, he'll buy 5% of a company or 3% of a company, which is a significant chunk of change. And then he'll start going to the board and saying, you need to buy back your shares because I want my shares to be worth more. And, of course, as soon as they do that, the shares are worth more, he sells, and he runs away. So he's a bit of a, I don't know what you call him, a corporate raider, a corporate attacker, yeah. So I don't. He has a unsavory reputation. Well, some people know he's a hero. So short-term investors, and then some companies will have different classifications of stocks. They'll have a Class A, a Class B. At one point, GM had 7 different classes of stocks. That's how big it was. For example, Berkshire Hathaway. The shares we talked about, $169,000. They are the Class A shares. And in the early 1990s, the financial world pressed Mr. Buffett to offer a lower cost version because he wasn't going to split the A shares. They figured that one out. And so he created the Class B shares. And they sold for around $1,160, when Berkshire Hathaway was selling for $20,000 or so, I forget on the exact numbers. But, I mean, he basically did what they asked him to do, but he made the shares still worth a whole lot of money comparatively to other shares. They were hoping for something in the $40 or $50 range. And then Mr. Buffett figured out that he could use these Class B shares to buy other companies. So just a few years ago, he split it 40 for one, and they still sell for a fairly high price of $112. So he uses the Class B shares to buy other companies, and the Class A shares are the original company. Some of the shares classifications will have different characteristics. For example, what happens sometimes when a company is family-owned and they go public, the family might have the Class B shares. The public gets the Class A shares or vice versa. And the Class B shares don't have any voting rights. They're not part of the management of the company, but they get nice dividends. They make sure they get dividends before everybody else, so the family gets paid off. But they're out of the business now. It's now a publicly run company. Questions, thoughts? Am I going too fast? Going too slow? Guys are real quiet today. Now, there are three different stock values that you will see. The par value, I still haven't figured out what this is. It's usually a penny or sometimes a dollar, and it doesn't have any meaning whatsoever. It reminds me of the cents-off coupons. A dollar off if you buy, you know, Gillette shaving cream or something. And so what people would do is they would send in the coupon to Gillette and say, I want my dollar. And Gillette would go, no, you don't understand. You're supposed to buy the product, and then you'll get a dollar off the product. Oh, okay. So what they do is on the back, they put value of the coupon. Have you seen that on the back? 0.001 cent. So if you send them in 10,000, you get a dollar. Okay, you know, whatever. That's what it reminds me of. It doesn't make any sense. If you can figure out what it is, tell me. But the book value and the market value are very important numbers. And we'll discuss book value more in detail as we go along. But it's one of the things I asked you to look for. And if you know accounting, you already know what this is. You take the assets minus the firm's liabilities, and that's your equity. That's your net worth. In the financial world, for a stock, we call it book value. The market value is what investors are paying for the stock. And in general, the book value is going to be far less than the market value. And that makes sense. Doesn't it make sense that a company intact would be worth far more than what it's worth if you sold off all the assets and paid off the liabilities, right? Doesn't that make sense? In other words, if you own a pizza shop, what is it really worth? I mean, the pots and the pans, the tables and all the cooking equipment, sometimes the oven is worth a lot. But you ever hear that company Bread and Sea up in Hillcrest? The guy went to France and bought this $100,000 oven. A $100,000 oven, but it makes really good French bread. And so you were to sell off all the assets of a pizza shop or a shoe shop, pay off all the liabilities, you wouldn't really have that much. The fact that the company is intact, making money, gives it a value above and beyond what's the value on the books. Now, does that mean sometimes the market value doesn't go below the book value? It happens. Sometimes the market value falls below the book value. And then the corporation is in serious trouble. Usually investors are trying to get away from them and saying that company's in trouble. And what can happen if the assets are real and can be sold, a company will swoop in. They're called corporate raiders, takeover artists, private equity firms, and they will buy up 50% plus one of the shares. And they will vote. And once you have 50% plus one, you get to vote and you get to say what's going to happen. They will liquidate the company, sell off all the assets, pay off the debts, and walk away with extra money in their pocket. Are you with me? That's capitalism. What if you're one of the workers who worked there? Tough luck, exactly. Well, do we really want to treat workers like that? No, that's why we have unemployment insurance. That's why people say, we have unemployment insurance to not pay lazy people. Well, I'm sure there's some people who work the system, but they're there. But I don't think it's the majority of people. If you're working at a company and a corporate raider comes in and buys up all the assets, buys up the company, sells all the assets, pays off the liabilities and walks away, you're out of a job. And we as a society want that to happen. If we believe in capitalism, which I think we do, pretty good, huh? You know,
probably the worst system around, except for all the others. We want that capital in that company to be reinvested somewhere else because it's not doing its job. It's being wasted. So just like a farmer will plow the fields and plow the old crops under and rejuvenate the land, the same thing is due for that capital that's locked in that company. You understand? You with me? And so that's why we have this social safety net. Okay, let's continue. Common stock dividends. Do we like dividends?
Yes.
Yes, we do. We love dividends. And dividends are shares of earnings given to stockholders, normally paid quarterly in the United States and most all countries that have something to do originally with the United Kingdom. The UK itself, Canada, Hong Kong, South Africa, countries that used to be associated with the United Kingdom. And so they're paid quarterly. Outside the United States, they're often paid semi-annually, which means every 6 months. And some countries and companies pay once a year. They just pay their dividends once a year. That's it. So that's something cultural. United States, remember, when do they pay? Quarterly, every quarter. The board of directors decides how much, if any, dividends should be paid and when to pay them. Dividends are usually a percentage of the earnings per share. So a very important number, which I ask you to look up in Chapter 5, your assignment. And, of course, I also ask you to do an earnings call. Earnings per share, EPS. And so what they'll do is they'll say, okay, we earned, wait till we get to the next slide. We earned $2, we'll pay out a buck. Here it is. Here's a company that reports net profit of $1 million. Yippee! $1 million of earnings. Well, is that a lot of money?
No.
Well, to you and me it is. But maybe this company is not. But whatever, it's a small company, let's say. And they have 500,000 shares outstanding. So what we do is we take $1 million of earnings divided by 500,000 shares, and that's equal to $2 earnings per share. So you now can look at your share of stock and say, hey, my share of stock is earning $2. Like a little machine out there, or a little business out there, everyone is earning $2. And the board of directors might decide to pay out 50% of the earnings per share in the form of dividends. They'll say, okay, you know, our dividend payout ratio is what it's called, is 50%. And so each shareholder would receive 50% of $2, which is $1. 50% of $2 equals $1, and they would pay that out to the dividend, to the shareholders. Got it? Okay, good. Now, let me take a look. Okay, get out the stock worksheet that we, who wasn't here on Tuesday? Okay, pass these around, please. Pass a couple that way, pass a couple that way. So on the back of the stock worksheet number one, that's what we did on Tuesday. We did worksheet number one. We're now going to do worksheet number two. Okay? Make sure everybody has one. Okay. Okay, so now, we're at T-Buff. All right. Now, the dividend yield is a very important number. This relates the dividend to the share price and puts stocks on a relative percentage basis rather than an absolute dollar basis. So let's say that this company were selling for $20. That's the market share. This company in the example was selling for $20. Market price. Did I say market share? Every share is selling for $20. What you would do is you would take that dollar's worth of dividend that you get in your pocket. They don't send you a check anymore. It's all electronic. And you divide it by the price of $20. In this case, a dollar divided by $20 would be 0.05, this company is paying us 5%. So this allows us to compare stocks to bonds and savings accounts. Now, there's a very big difference. Is a savings account return guaranteed? Yeah, a savings account? Savings account return guaranteed? yes, by the full faith and credit of the United States government, is a bond guaranteed?
Yeah.
Well, yes and no. It depends. I mean, it's guaranteed by the entity that is paying the interest, but the entity could go defunct. The United States government, is that going to go bankrupt?
No.
Everybody say no. Is the United States government going to go bankrupt?
No.
Some people think it is. Some people think we already are. Is our municipalities going to go bankrupt? The state of California, the city of Chula Vista, Southwestern Community College?
Maybe,
but it happens very, very rarely, folks. I mean, Detroit's going through that, Stockton, and what else are the others? There's another California municipality that's going through bankruptcy right now. Darn it. San Bernardino. Is it San Bernardino? Yeah, San Bernardino. But for the most part, municipalities don't go bankrupt. Do corporations go bankrupt? It happens. It happens. And so that's the pecking order. The bonds from the Treasury are the safest. Municipalities are next, and then the corporate are the least safe. But still, most corporations pay their debts. So are bonds much less riskier than stocks?
Yeah.
Yes. Stock dividends are not guaranteed. They are optional. A company, a board of directors, could decide, even though they've been doing it for 100 years, they could decide next quarter, we're not going to pay dividends. It's unlikely. It doesn't happen often, but it could happen. All right, great. Okay, traditionally 3 to 6% was normal. In the 1990s, dividends went down to 2% or less. In fact, at the peak of March 2000, dividends were 1% from the S&P 500, Standard & Poor's 500. Then they went above 3%, touching 4% in March of 2009, and now they're back down to about 2%, the Standard & Poor's 500. So 2%, not very exciting, is it? Well, what's your savings account paying you?
No.
0.001. You know, right? 0.01. So, yeah, so not bad. And what are bonds paying?
2.5%, 3%, 4% if you go out to the long bonds.
Important dates. Now, this is something I know. It's kind of boring. Why should I care? But you're an introduction to investment student. You need to know this. There are several dates with regard to dividends. There's a declaration date. This is the date that the board of directors declares a dividend. We hereby declare a dividend. That any investor who is a holder of our shares on the date of record, which might not be for another month or so, will get a dividend. They are entitled to a share. But the ex-dividend date is 3 days before that date. Huh? You have to buy the shares before the ex-dividend date or you will not be a shareholder. And why is this? We're going to see that on the next slide. And then the payment date might be, you know, 3 or 4 weeks later than that. Why is the ex-dividend date 3 days before the date of record? That's because stock transactions close in 3 days. For you to own the shares on June 18th, assuming this was a Monday. Let's say this is a Monday, right? Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. You have to buy the shares on Monday, the 15th, because the stock transactions close in 3 days. You won't own the shares until June 18th. It used to be a week. It used to be 5 days. It was made very easy for businesses because there was always Saturday and Sunday in between. But now it's 3 days. Mutual funds, by the way, close in 1 day. And so do bonds. Open-end mutual funds. ETFs are like stocks. They close in 3 days, I think. I got to look that up. I think they close in 3 days because they're like stocks. So theoretically, now you got to follow this, folks, because you have to know it, even though I think it's kind of lame, but it's important. The opening share price on the ex-dividend date should reflect a drop in price commensurate with the amount of the dividend. So if the company's going to give you a buck, then what we should see is the price drop by a dollar. Okay? Now, does it ever work that way? No, because prices are dropping and going up all the time. So anybody who tells you that this is always going to happen, just say, sure. And so what you'll hear is, don't buy the dividend. No. You are often better off waiting until the X dividend date before buying a stock. Wait until it goes X dividend, then buy it. Why? Because dividends are taxable transactions, and if you buy the dividend, you buy the stock just before the X dividend date, you'll be responsible for paying the tax. Oh, well, you got money in your pocket. Presumably, the stock price will fall commensurate. You like that word, commensurate? Not commiserate. That's a different word. Commensurate with the amount of the dividend. So, you are better off waiting until after the ex-dividend date so you get a better price on the stock and you do not generate a taxable transaction. Now, if you're dealing with hundreds of thousands or maybe millions of dollars, maybe this makes sense. But do you think it's a really big deal for us retail investors? I don't think so. But you're going to hear this, and you have to understand what they're talking about. Don't buy the dividend. Wait until after it goes ex-dividend. I don't think it's a big important thing, but you have to understand it. Now, something else you have to... I'm sorry if I'm sounding preachy, but... Because you guys don't do well on the exam. I'm going to answer these questions, and they don't do well. It's bad for my self-esteem. There are two types of dividends. There are cash dividends, and these are happy, happy things that we want. Yes, we want these. And there are stock dividends. Bad. I can't do a skull and crossbones. Okay, these are bad. We don't want stock dividends. And why is that? Well, cash dividends are cash in your pocket. You had a share, they pay a dollar, boom, you get a dollar. You used to get a check, now it's all electronic. Whereas stock dividends are payments of a dividend in the form of additional shares of stock. So in many ways, it's like a stock split. They're issuing more shares. Example, the board of directors declares a 10% stock dividend. So you have 10 shares, you get an extra one share. But what happens to the price of the stock? Just like a stock dividend... I mean, a stock split, dropping half if you give them, if you have 100 shares and now you have 200, they're giving you an extra 10% shares, the price drops 10%. But isn't it nice that the IRS doesn't tax us for stock dividends? Isn't that nice of the IRS? I mean, they tax you for cash dividends because you're getting cash in your pocket, but they don't tax you for stock dividends because you're not getting anything. So isn't that nice of the IRS not to tax us for nothing? Thanks a lot, guys. Now, here's where it gets tricky. DRIPS. Huh? DRIPS. Dividend reinvestment plans, which are actually very cool. And I think we have time. We'll take a look at one. These are plans in which the shareholders have their cash dividends automatically reinvested into additional shares. This is a taxable transaction. No additional shares were issued. Hence, no dissolution. What happens is, well, there are more options now, but traditionally with dividend reinvestment plans, you would go to large companies. Mostly it was all large cap, large companies which paid long histories of dividends, McDonald's, GE, Johnson & Johnson, IBM. And you say, look, I want to buy your shares, but I want my dividends reinvested back in the company. And they say, cool, contact this company. They didn't do it. Somebody did it for them. One of the big companies is CompuShare in the market. And what CompuShare does is they will go out and buy the shares in the open market, and when IBM pays you the dividends, they actually pay it to CompuShare. CompuShare goes out, buys the shares, puts them in your account. And they normally charge almost nothing, or nothing. And let's take a look at an example. Before we do that, let's finish, I'm sorry. We'll take a look at an example. Now, does this sound familiar? This is how mutual funds work. When your mutual fund pays out dividends or capital gains, they automatically, unless you ask otherwise, will reinvest it in more shares of the mutual fund. Okay? So in this way, if you own a company like GE or Johnson & Johnson, which are these multinational companies that are invested in all different types of sectors of the economy, it's kind of like buying a mutual fund. So now let's take a look at, this is a little group I used to belong to. Here it is. Sempra Energy. You know who Sempra Energy is, right? SDG&E. And they're actually another fairly well-run as any utility. Compare them to any other utility. And who's the company here? Shareholder Services, Equiserve. That's another one, Equiserve. And so what we did, this was This was an investment club I was a member of, and we called ourselves Cockatoo Grove Investment Partnership. Do you know what Cockatoo Grove is? Cockatoo is a partner, but Cockatoo Grove is where you're sitting right now. Before it was Southwestern Community College, it was called Cockatoo Grove. And if you look at some of the maps on the internet, you'll see Cockatoo Grove. And what the hell is that? That's what Southwestern used to be. And if you go into the 100 building, I think they'll let you in there. It's where the president and superintendent is. You'll see these huge portraits of what this place looked like when they started breaking ground. It was nothing. There was absolutely nothing here. It was unbelievable. Surrounded by nothing, there was these, you know, earth-moving equipment and everything. And yes?
What year was it?
1961? 62? 1961, 62, 63 is when they started. Yeah. And then it's funny to watch the world build up around Southwestern. And the same thing is true when we bought the Otay Mesa. Have you seen the Otay Mesa campus? When we first bought it, there was nothing there. They were working on the freeway and there was nothing. And now there's this whole world growing up around it. So what did we do? We bought a certain number of shares, and as we would get dividends, here in this case it was $9.02, the current price at that day was $24.53, so they gave us 0.368 per shares, which then added to our balance. And so our next dividend was $9.12. You see the compounding? Which gave us, at $26.23, fewer shares, but the price had gone up. But you see, our number of shares is building up. And they don't show it here, but every once in a while there'd be a 6-cent fee or 9 cents. So it was very, very cost effective. And in other words, Equiserve was basically being paid by SDG&E and whatever small amounts of fees were being passed on to the consumer. It was very little. So these are cool ways for you to invest. And there are companies now that will put all your drips in one place. Because the problem with drips is if you have 18 different companies, you get 18 different statements, it can be a bit of a pain. But there are some companies that will allow you to do the drips all in your one brokerage account. Cool? And isn't that a great name, DRIP? Dividend Reinvestment Plan. It's not a great name. I think it's a great name. That's me. Okay, and so here it is. Here it is. There's a DRIP. All right. Now, price-to-earnings ratio. Oh, boy. I'm trying to go quickly, but I don't want to go too quickly. I don't want to go too fast. I want you guys to understand this. But it would be cool if we could finish Chapter 5 today. It would be cool. Price-to-earnings ratio. Oh, boy, folks. Ain't this the most important statistic out there? You will hear people argue hours and hours over P.E. It's a very simple statistic. You take the price and you divide it by the earnings. That's why it's called P.E. or P, usually written P/E. Sometimes it's written as P.E. So in our example, if we have a $20 price and $2 worth of earnings per share, we would take $20 divided by 2 and 10. Now don't put a percent sign, don't put a dollar sign. It is unitless because the dollars cancel. Or whatever you want to say. Traditionally, stocks sold for P.E. ratios of 5 to 14. A P.E. of 20 was only reserved for the fastest growing stocks. But in the 1920s, late 1920s and 1960s, and then in the 1980s and 90s, P.E.s just went way over 20. Oh boy, I'll never forget looking down at, this was 99, 98, looking down at the screen, this is in the brokerage firm, and seeing eBay's P.E. at 10,000. And I said, this ain't going to last. No, it's not going to last. We will spend a great deal of time learning P.E. and other valuation techniques in the next few chapters. Okay, great. So now let's take a look at stock worksheet number 2, which is on the back of stock worksheet number 1 that we did on, you have it, stock worksheet number 1? There it is, that's the back. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to skip down to, let's do number 1. This is review. Let's do number 1 through 6. For the following stocks, name the exchange or the market, the New York Stock Exchange, the Amex, which is now called the MICKET. I'm sorry, the New York Stock Exchange, MKY. The NASDAQ or the OTC, which is the bulletin boards or the pink sheets, but now the pink sheets are calling themselves OTC markets, that you believe the stock could be expected on. And sure enough, if we wanted to be sure, we would just look it up. But where do you think you'd find Microsoft?
NASDAQ,
right. And boy, don't you know that NYSC was waiting for Microsoft to move over to the New York Stock Exchange because they had the M just ready for them. M, and they never bought it. How about GE? New York Stock Exchange. Been around for over 125 years. How about Flim Flam Incorporated? What do they sell? Huh? Flim Flam. Have you heard of them? What? You don't know? Didn't I tell you about the one company who's selling the bacon stretchers, right? The bacon. This company's coming up with a left-handed smoke shifter. You've heard of a left-handed smoke shifter? No? Well, it's going to do a whole lot better than the right-handed smoke shifter, which, you know, blew up when people turned it on. Okay, anyway, so where does this guy go? OTC, bulletin boards, pink sheets, the netherworld, the wrong side of the town, the bad side of town, the red light district. How about AMD? No. There's the swing and the miss. AMD is on the New York Stock Exchange. Don't you know that New York Stock Exchange would love to have Intel, their main competitor? Tell me about AMD. Who are they?
They make processors.
Exactly. They make the same processors that Intel makes. And because of, you know, Intel didn't want them to do it, but they made a deal with them back in the 1980s to make the 286, and then they were able to finagle so that they could make processors along with Intel. However, they have never been as profitable as Intel. And so, you know, the New York Stock Exchange is going, oh, jeez, because AMD is always on the verge of collapse. And Intel doesn't want them to go under, because then they'll be under the antitrust gun, having antitrust meaning, you know, you can't be a monopoly. But it was okay for Microsoft to be a monopoly, but it's not okay for Intel. Figure that one out. Now, what about, so check out AMD. Let's hope they survive. Would you be worried about buying a processor with AMD? They're cheaper, and no, they have never, my understanding, they have never had a problem with compatibility, other than when, you know, it's not their problem, it's somebody else's problem. They did something stupid. Yeah, some manufacturer did something really stupid, and it wasn't AMD's fault, and their graphics card won't work with AMD processors. Diamond ETF. Exchange-traded fund. What is Diamond? That's the nickname for the Dow Jones Industrial Average ETFs. So these exchange-traded funds have those 30 stocks that we saw on Tuesday in them. You think it's a very good ETF to own? Personally, I don't, because I don't think the Dow is a very good index. If you're going to own an ETF, have the S&P 500, 500 companies, have the 4,500, the Wilshire 4,500. But the Dow, I'm not a big fan of, but that's why there's chocolate and vanilla and some people like strawberry. But where do you think the ETFs are exchanged or sold? Yeah, any. You could put down any. But what I often put down is the Amex, because as a little nod to the Amex, because that's where they started. But now they're sold everywhere. The ETFs are exchanged. Some of you need more sleep at night. Three of them. What? What? Oh, you're moving. Oh, God. I hate moving. And then International Paper. Who are they? They used to be in the Dow. They used to be one of the industrials. They make paper. And when you make paper, you also make money. No, actually, money's not made out of paper. It's made out of cloth. It's made out of linen. But anyway, when you make paper, you also make wood products. They're byproducts of one another. So International Paper also makes building products. And they used to be in the Dow, but not anymore. There are companies that have been around for over 100 years. Where do you think they'd be? New York Stock Exchange. And of course, if we really wanted to be sure, what would we do? We'd run on over to the computer and go, oh, okay, they're on the NASDAQ. Oh, they're on the New York Stock Exchange. Okay, great. Now let's skip over to problem number 6. 16, 17, and 18. Who is Widgets Incorporated? Yeah, what are widgets? Thingamabobs. you know, they're not important. Just anything. And they're currently selling for $50. Their earnings per share, so $50 is the market price. Their earnings per share last year were $3.50, and they're paying a dividend to their shareholders of $2. So how do we compute the price-to-earnings ratio? What do? Divide the price of everybody. What's the price? Market price? $50 divided by the earnings or the dividends? It's price-to-earnings, $3.50. And so what is their P.E.? 14 point? Already been on guard. You got to calculate it. 14 point what? 25? 29. So 14.29. Is that high? Remember, don't put a dollar sign. Don't put a percent sign next to the P.E. Is that high? No, it's actually right now on the low side. It's actually in the average. It's average. So Widgets is an average company. People are not too excited about their future prospects, but they're not thinking that they're going to go down the porcelain oasis. Number 17 is the dividend payout ratio. Well, how much are their dividends? $2. And how much are their earnings? $3.50. So $2 divided by $3.50 is 0.57. Now here, if you want to, you can, you don't have to, but you can make it into a percentage. You can leave it as 0.57, or you can move the decimal point to the right, because it is a percentage. They are paying you in dividends 57% of what they made in earnings. And you accounting fans, what happens to the money that they earn that they don't pay out to their dividend? What's it called? Retained earnings. Exactly. That's exactly what it's called. There's a little bit of accounting trivia for you. When you take accounting, it won't be trivia. It will be painful. All right, and now the last one is the dividend yield. Very important number. What are they paying us in dividends? $2. How much did we have to pay to get those $2? $50. So $2 divided by 50 is 0.04. You got your calculators out, right? Or 4%, which is a healthy dividend these days. Is that difficult? It is? I hope not, because the calculations are going to get a little trickier than this. But you should be able to do these, okay? Nod your head yes.
Okay, let's keep going.
And then we're going to do the next part, but we got to look through this first. And so I'm going to do this kind of quickly and see if you can stay awake. What? It's not boring. Somebody just needs some sleep. That's what it is. Sleep. You know, the basis of all activity is rest. Somebody very smart told me that a long time ago. The basis of all activity is rest. And there are some people who say, you know, what's more important is the sleep. Really, all we do is get up so we can go out and get more food to tank up and go back to sleep. Turns it on its side. And some of you don't get enough sleep, so you got to go back to sleep. So now, when we talk about stocks, people tend to lump them in with all of them. They just say, yeah, they're all crooks. They're all companies that are alike. Is that true? No. Well, they may be all crooks. But companies are so different. And these are just the major types of companies. The biggest of them all, the granddaddy, are the blue chip stocks. These are financially strong, high-quality companies with long and stable records of earnings and dividends. They are often referred to as value stocks. You will hear people use the word value, but be careful. What is the party going on outside? What's going on? They attract conservative investors. Now, I'm not talking about politics, you know, liberal versus conservative. This is mean people who are worried about losing their money. They're still stocks. And sometimes they fall on bad times. General Electric, one of the bluest of the blue chips for over 100 years, really had a bad time of it in 2008. But they survived. General Motors, they're gone. The old General Motors is gone. If you own that stock, you now cannot even trade it. The last time it was traded, I told you what they changed the name to, didn't I? Liquidation Motors. When they went through bankruptcy, the old GM stock was changed to Liquidation Motors, or sometimes called Motors Liquidation. And people still traded it, even though they knew it was worthless. And it last traded in 2011 for 4 cents. It's still on. I checked about a month or so ago. It's still there. So sometimes blue chip companies go under. So who are the blue chips today? Tough question, folks. Who's that company that makes the fizzy sugar water with the brown crayons stuck in it? Coca-Cola! All right. Who else? Who else are some of the blue chips? McDonald's, IBM.
Walmart.
Yeah, Walmart's made it into the blue chip world. Is Google a blue chip?
It's only been around 10 years.
Home Depot is now considered a blue chip. Yeah, Home Depot is considered a blue chip. GE. Sears. wait for Sears. I don't know what they're making. Well, you know, they're still around. So is Kmart. You know, Kmart and Sears are one company now. I don't know. Maytag? I don't think so. No, I think Westinghouse bought Maytag. I'm not sure. But Sears and Kmart are now one company. Now, you get two people. If you see two people drowning, do you throw them a life preserver to each one? Here's a rope. Hold on to each other. That's basically what, in my humble opinion, I'm not a retail analyst. But when you go down the 8th Street, and you go from most Southwestern down to 805. You look at the parking lot. There's Costco and then there's Kmart. Which one? Yeah, right. So I don't know about you, but I'm not giving Sears or Kmart too much time. But that doesn't mean they won't. Doesn't mean they won't do it. And now, the next group are the income. Oh, by the way, where did the term blue chip come from?
Poker.
Yeah, poker. Gambling. Because before the 1920s or so, The hoi polloi did not own stocks. Gentlemen owned stocks. Not even women. Women, maybe women, but they weren't allowed to take care of it. It was all gentlemen. And gentlemen gambled. That's what gentlemen did. And so the blue chips were the most expensive chips on the table. And so blue chip stocks became the most expensive stocks.
Bit of trivia.
Income stocks are stocks with long and sustained records of paying higher than average dividends. They are also often referred to as value stocks, as opposed to growth, which we'll look at in a few slides. Normally, these are slow growth companies in mature industries. So the poster child, for income stocks are utilities. Are utilities going anywhere? No. Are people going to stop all of a sudden, start taking cold showers in the dark? No, they want the lights on. They want the water hot. What? Well, if you know there's no gas and electricity, you're going to take cold showers in the dark. But no, they pay dividends. They're not growing very fast, but they're also not going to go anywhere. And banks, for decades, used to be considered income stocks until they started playing games in the 1990s and 2000s, leading up to the housing crash. Now, growth stocks. Growth stocks are the stars, folks. These are the stocks that you see on the cover of GQ and Vogue and Vanity Unfair. And they've got their hair all nice and they've got capped white teeth and pecs. And you with me? These are the stars. Stocks that experience high rates of growth in operations and earnings, normally 15 to 20% or higher, which doesn't sound like much, but if you were growing at 20% in 3 years, you'd be twice your size. Often no dividends at all, or a very small token amount. Why? Because they need those earnings to push back into the company, because they're growing. They need money to grow. Most of the profits are reinvested in the company. The stock price should go up, but it's going to be very volatile. So let's take a look at some examples. Intel, Microsoft, HP, are these growth stocks anymore? No. I mean, 20 years ago they were, right? They were growing like crazy when people didn't. But now everybody has a computer, and they don't want a computer anymore. They want their phone, their phablet, or whatever it's called. What's it called? Is that what it's called? No, the phablet.
The big phone.
The big phone. The phablet.
The Galaxy Note.
What's it called? A phablet, isn't it?
No.
It's a phone and a tablet. They call them phablets. Look it up. Phablet. It's a combination phone and tablet. Hey, I'm a little hip, not very hip, but I'm culturally challenged in many ways. Don't ask me about Sylemyris or jerking or whatever it's called. Okay, but are these the gross stuff? No, Microsoft, Intel, they've become cyclicals, as we'll see in a bit. Who are the gross stocks now? Who's on the cover of GQ? Farcebook, Titter, right? Social media, social diseases. Am I wrong? Right? Did Facebook just bought WhatsApp? Speaking of which. Yes, how about that? Speaking of which, Facebook just bought this company that has an app. WhatsApp, it's called, right?
Yeah, texting
and calling free. $19 billion? They couldn't write their own?
They shut it down like 4 hours after they bought it, too.
Why'd they do that?
I don't know. Check on company. No, they had a server outage.
Oh, okay. So it was just coincidence. They didn't do it on purpose.
Yeah, that's what they said.
They couldn't build their own WhatsApp for $19 billion? I don't understand. I'm in the wrong business, obviously. I'm teaching you about it. You can go out there and decide whether WhatsApp was worth it. Anybody use WhatsApp?
More popular overseas, I think.
It's more popular overseas. Interesting.
It has a lot of user information, like where you're at, user location for you to visit online,
yeah.
Telephone numbers, address, phone. So it has a lot of user information you can describe it.
Does anybody actually use it in here?
I use it.
Use it. You got to have a smartphone, though, right?
You just can text people who are, like, in China, or, like, I text people who are in Italy and such. But, I mean, like, it's people you know.
It's people you know.
Yeah,
that's
like,
good, then.
No, because it's like, yeah, you put your phone number, and then it creates another phone number. So.
What?
So, like, if I text you, rather than have, like, you have, like, a 9-digit number, I text your regular phone. But it goes through the WhatsApp. Yeah.
That's what they should call it. Whatever.
Whatever.
Okay. So those are the growth stocks now. So now, folks, you are going to hear people in the industry talk about growth versus value. And you have to be careful because they often use these terms to designate something that may or may not be what you're looking at. What do I mean? The investment world loves to use the terms growth and value, but the meanings of the terms are not exact. Typically, investors often use the word growth to designate a high PE stock, while they use the word value to designate a low PE stock. And price-to-earnings ratio is very subtle. We're going to take a look at it in detail. But in general, the higher the PE, the more investors are optimistic about the future of that company. The lower the PE, the more investors are pessimistic about the future of the company. But some investors will say, well, it's a low PE stock, it's a good value. But that's not necessarily true. It's a high PE stock, it's not a good value. No, I use the word value to mean there's something there that interests me, that may or may not be worth something more in the future. That's something that can be of value. That's not the way the industry talks about it often. So here's a tremendous example. In January of 2005, Google was selling for around $200 with a sky IPE. It was in the 60s or 70s somewhere. And we've got to go back into history. Google went public in 2004 at about 85. And then by January, it was up to 200. And people thought, oh, it's overpriced. They're making money hand over fist. At the same time, GM, the old GM, was selling for $34 with a very low PE. I think it was 6. And it was still paying very high dividends. Today, Google sells for actually more. It's actually over 1,000. I changed that. It just jumped about 2 months ago. With a much lower PE. And the old stock called Motors, the old GM stock called Motors Liquidation, last sold for 4 cents March of 2011, is now worthless. So which one was the better value? Google was the better value in my lexicon, in my ability, in my way of speaking. But the many investors will say, well, it was a value stock, the PE was very low. So you have to be careful about that. You with me? Yeah. Penny stocks. We'll get to the penny stocks in a bit. They're speculating. They're speculating. They're just hoping that there's some greater fool out there that will buy and hire. We'll take a look at penny stocks in just a bit. We'll get to them today. Now, on the other side of our multi-sided coin are companies that are called cyclicals. Cyclical stocks are companies whose earnings and overall market performance are closely linked to the general state of the economy. If the economy does well, they do well. If the economy does poorly, they do poorly. And the poster child for cyclical stocks are auto stocks, automobiles. But cyclical stocks are also any company that makes stuff. Timber, steel, chemicals. Chips now have become cyclical. Because when you buy something at the store, what's inside of it?
Air.
Air, a lot of air. But everything you buy now has what? You've seen those little RFID, has a chip, has an identifier. Everything you buy has a chip. And then inside it, the shoes or a microwave, it has a chip in that also, but that other chip you just throw away. So many computer companies have become cyclical. They're no longer growth companies. But why are automobiles cyclical? Well, what happens when the economy is doing well? The economy is expanding. People are getting good jobs. They're getting higher paid jobs. What do? They go out and buy a car. Well, that's the old car, okay? No, I want a new car. And the automobile companies make money hand over fist when the economy is doing well. When the economy is doing poorly, what happens? Old Bessie's doing just fine. She's got 400,000 miles on her, but no problem. We'll keep her going. Are you with me? Understand? And so that's what we call a cyclical stock. But any company, pretty much, that makes stuff is cyclical. Alcoa, aluminum, right? And USX and the other oil, steel companies, oil companies are cyclical. Okay. Now, on the other side of the coin are defensive companies. These are companies, remember we talked about the equity income? They're often in this group. These are stocks that tend to hold their own or may even do well when the economy starts to falter. They remain stable during declines in the market, and they're often associated with income stocks, equity income funds, equity income funds. Why? Because these are companies that make food or drugs or soap. Do you buy more insulin because the economy is doing well? No, I hope not. Do you buy less insulin because the economy is doing badly? No, you need your insulin. Do you eat more Cheerios because the economy is doing well? Do you eat less Cheerios? Maybe you buy a cheaper brand. And do you stop using toilet paper because the... You do? Newspaper is pretty rough, folks. I don't know if you ever... Okay, I'm glad to see you're kidding. So these defensive stocks will often do well when the growth stocks and the cyclicals falter. Why? Because investors will move out of the growth and the cyclical, because they think they're going into recession, into companies that are defensive, that hold up even when the economy does poorly. Are you with me? Yes.
What about companies like Northrop and...
That's a whole different world, isn't it? Northrop Grumman and General Dynamics. These are defense contractors, not to be confused with... Did I spell it right? Defense with an S, yes. Not to be confused with defensive stocks. Defense contractors make bullets, and they make bombs, and they make jet airplanes and submarines. Where do they fit? They are cyclical, but they're not following the business cycle. They're following the geopolitical cycle. And when there's a war, or there's this cold war, maybe we're going to start another cold war with Russia. I don't think that's going to happen, but I hope not. But then they do well. And don't let anybody tell you that war is good for an economy. War is great for companies that make bullets. They're great for those. But in general, war is terrible for an economy. It drains resources that could be used for productivity. And do you want to bomb potential customers? No. Ask FedEx. You don't want to bomb people who could you be doing business with. And so, you know, war is sometimes war, but don't let people tell you it's good for an economy. It's not. All right. The next group, here. Somebody talked about Sears, are called turnarounds. I often refer to them as goners because usually they don't turn around. Ever hear Kodak? Yeah, right. And so who are the turnarounds now? Well, the Sears and the Kmarts are basically in that group. Let's hope they do. I don't think they will, but let's hope they do because we don't want to wish ill on anybody except for Microsoft. But in the early 1980s, Chrysler almost disappeared. You weren't alive, most of you, but Chrysler almost disappeared. They made some hugely boneheaded maneuvers. Their cars were, the vital parts were shedding before you got them off the lot. And they got a horrible reputation, and they almost disappeared. And then a gentleman by the name of Lee Iacocca, and for those of you who are in the business, Iacocca, I'm spelling it wrong, I'm sure. Iacocca. There it is. He turned the company around. And check him out. He did a very good job. And, of course, the stock was selling for $40.50 down to 3. And if you bought it when it hit 3, within the 3 years it was back up to 47. So that's what's cool about a turnaround. You have to decide, is there potential for a rebound? Because if you believe that this company is going to turn itself around, think about the people who bought Apple in 1998, 99, when they had to be bailed out by Microsoft. That's exactly what happened in the late 90s. People thought Apple's gone. They had to be bailed out by Microsoft. In one of their conferences, they had a huge video tie-in with Bill Gates because he was going to announce that. Yeah, I don't know if you remember that. You were kids, most of you. But he had this huge, big deal, and he announced that Microsoft was investing $100 million in Apple to keep it from going under. And everybody went, boo! They all booed Bill Gates. And now I'm sort of saying, thank you, Bill, thank you. Because now Apple's bigger than Microsoft. Okay, so that's the tricky part of turnaround. And then the next one are asset plays. Asset plays are subtle. You have to look behind the company's face. You have to go and dig deep. These are companies that are sitting on assets that could be sold or spun off if they got in trouble. For example, JCPenney's owns an insurance company. I forget the name of it. Touchstone? That's not Touchstone or something or other. And they're the ones who try to sell you the baby insurance when your child is born. The Gerber baby. They try to sell you insurance that you don't really need. Very, very profitable. So in the late 1990s, early 2000s, many of the department stores were just disappearing. Montgomery Ward's, Broadway, Robinson's, Robinson May, Mervon eventually went under. But JCPenney's was also in trouble, but they had this, they still have it, and they're doing it again. They made some boneheaded maneuvers. They brought the guy in from Apple to revamp all their stores, and they really did a bad job of it. And now they could. I think they're going to survive. I don't know. I'm not a retail analyst. If they do go on, anybody retail? Anybody, any mall queens or kings in here? What do you think of J.C. Poopies? Pennies? Boo, it sucks. The younger people don't like it. The older people like it.
They try to revamp
40-50-year-old women. What? Older folks. So they're very popular with older folks. And I don't know if it's changed, but they are the most popular store with millionaires. JCPenney.
They issue out a lot of coupons.
What?
They
issued a lot of coupons, and their clothes are in pretty decent shape, in pretty good shape. Why don't you like it, younger folks? Nobody goes in there?
They like
I go in there.
I'd rather go to Macy's.
Macy's? 26. At twice the price? Okay, well, that's asset plays. You've got to scrape beneath the surface to find out. If you looked at PepsiCo, would you think that they're a major competitor to Coke? They are, but they make a whole lot of money off of what? Chips. they own Frito-Lay. So that's what, that's the kind of asset play you have to keep your, you have to keep in your head. And then the last group, well, actually there's another group, but this is the last group that we'll take a look at for now. Well, no, we'll get to the next, on the next slide. Yeah, penny stocks. These are the scams, folks. These are the scams. We'll take a look at them today, I think. But let's continue and just end this because now we're ready. Exactly. Foreign stocks. International stocks. It used to be difficult, if practically impossible, to transact. Most United States investors, accredited investors, would buy foreign companies through what are called American Depository Receipts, ADRs. Please remember that. Sometimes you'll see Global Depository Receipts, GDRs. And what happens is a major bank or trust company on Wall Street or somewhere goes to Japan and buys up a ton of shares of Toyota or Panasonic or Sony, brings them to New York, and then puts them in a vault and reissues them dollar-denominated. So sometimes the shares will, you know, there'll be little differences in price because they're priced in yen and these are priced in dollars, but it's the same idea. And now what has happened is many brokerage firms have very, very easy to transact international brokerage accounts, which allows you to keep dollars and pesos and yen and euros and go out to those exchanges in Frankfurt, in Hong Kong, in Tokyo, in Mexico City, and buy companies on foreign exchanges. But what's the problem? Currencies. Currencies are very subtle. And those of you who go down to Mexico often, you know what happens. When the dollar gets more expensive relative to the peso, cool. I can buy more things in Mexico with my dollars because I buy more pesos. If the dollar gets less expensive, it's harder to buy stuff in Mexico. Well, the exact opposite happens for your investments. If the dollar goes up, whatever you own in Mexico or Japan or Europe, automatically, if nothing else changes, and it always changes all the time, automatically your investment is worth less. If the dollar goes down, your investment is worth more, automatically. So it's the cross currents are subtle, what it does. But remember, if the dollar goes up, you get to buy more at a cheaper price in the other country. So there are advantages and disadvantages. But most of us little people will transact using global and international mutual funds. Why? Because these companies, they have the resources to do the research in those countries, and it doesn't mean there's still not others. You know, people used to think all the risk was outside the United States, but that's not true anymore. There are scams in the United States, and there are scams outside the United States. So my advice would be, and this is what I do, is buy your global stocks, your international stocks, your foreign stocks, through mutual funds. Make sense? But you still got to know it. You with me? Okay, good. So now let's take a look at now 7 through 15 on stock worksheet number 2. For the following stock, and this is part of your assignment. Some people have this, have a hard problem with this. But the last column in the assignment where you're going to look up things, the very last column, you put down what you think the company is. Realizing that some companies fit in 2 categories or 3, and some companies, like defense stocks, don't fit anywhere. So it's not perfect. Where would you put 4? Yeah, I'm with Scott. Yeah. It's still turning itself around. It sure looks good for Ford. I mean, they still have some serious problems. Here in the United States, they are going gangbusters. They are building cars that people want. They're doing a really good job selling them. In Europe, they're still lagging. They're having a hard time in Europe. Latin America, and in Asia, they don't have a presence. And they want a presence in Asia, and that's going to be hard for them. But we'll see. It looks good for Ford. So we'll say turn around, and we won't put down Garner. But they used to be a Fibucha, right? Yeah. Hopefully there'll be one again. How about Walmart? Yeah, they're a blue chip. What else are they? They're not only a blue chip. Well, I don't know if they're still growing outside the United States. They're you know, trying to move into Asia. They're already in Latin America. But they're also cyclical. Why? Exactly. They're following the business cycle. But in some ways, people say, well, they're defensive. Because when the economy goes down, people stop going to Penny's and Macy's and they run to Walmart. So that seemed to have happened during the last recession. Most retailers are cyclical with the economy. When it does well, they do well. When it does badly, they do badly. But some retailers, like Dollar General, they're more defensive because when the economy does well, oh, I'm not going to Dollar General, I'm going to Macy's. When the economy does bad, oh, Dollar General, you know, your clothes aren't so bad. You with me, understand? And so Walmart is cyclical, but in this case, they're more counter-cyclical. They're more defensive. How about Starbucks? Jerks. Well, they were the archetypal. They used to be on the cover of GQ and Vanity Unfair and Vogue, but not anymore. A few years back, they said they had about 10, 12,000 stores. We're going to have 40,000 stores within the next 15 years. Now, where the hell are they going to put them? They already got them on in one corner. You know, one here and one on the other side of the corner. We're going to put them on top of one another. And then about a year later, they said, oh, we're actually going to close 600 of our stores. So they used to be the archetypal growth stock. Are they still growing? I think they are still growing, but they're not growing like gangbusters. So where can we put them? You could put growth. But where do you put a company like Starbucks? I put them in the stupid category. I mean, I don't want to insult anybody, but they're geniuses. They take a cup of coffee that, you know, costs like 20, 30 cents, 10 cents, and they charge $5. And people buy it. That's the thing. I'm like, why do you buy it? Oh, because it's Starbucks. And they spray that smell when you come in. They spray it out. Oh, it smells good. Okay. How about Sears Kmart? Well, not yet. Not yet, Philip. Sears kid, not penny stock yet. But turn around, maybe goner. How about General Mills? What do they make?
Cheerios.
Food company. They are blue chip. They're part of the Get Dow. So they're a blue chip. But they're also defensive. Do you eat less Cheerios because the economy is doing poorly? Do you eat more? Well, maybe eat more. I do. How about Union Pacific Railroad? Income, asset play. They're also cyclical because they're a transportation company. So before the stuff can be sold, it's got to be transported. But railroads are sitting on something that was given to them 160 years ago, 180 years ago. Land. They own chunks of downtown cities around the country. And they own this huge swath of land. So there's an asset play, too. Very good, very good. Smart, smart, smart. Okay, how about Michelin? Michelin, what do they make?
Tires.
Michelin. They're a blue chip, but are they based in the United States? Well, not really. They're a French company, but they own Uniroyal and B.F. Goodrich. And who else do they own? No, Firestone's owned by Bridgestone. That's a Japanese company. But they own Uniroyal, B.F. Goodrich. Oh, darn. Is it Cooper? No, Goodyear is owned by Goodyear. Goodyear is still an American company. Okay, so we could say that they're a foreign company. They're also a blue chip. They're one of the largest companies in the world. They're everywhere. And what would you call them? Tires. Somebody sells tires. More cyclical. More cyclical because when more cars are being built, people need more tires, right? But they're also cyclical in that. Did you say defensive? They're defensive because tires have to be replaced. So in that respect, so you can put them anywhere in that respect. I would call them foreign, blue chip, and cyclical. Alcoa, Aluminum Corporation of America. What do they make? Aluminum. I'm keeping it too late. I'm sorry. Aluminum. Aluminum. So what are they? They're cyclical. When the economy expands, there's more need for aluminum. And when the economy contracts, there's less need. They make stuff. And then the last one, El Paso Electric. Income plus they're one of those utilities that are sitting on tons of resources, so they're also an asset play. Okay, excellent. All right, on Tuesday, we will end with market capitalization and then stock strategies, and we begin Chapter 6. So study, study, study hard. Bring honor and glory to Southwestern Community College. I know this stuff is a little boring sometimes. It's interesting. You've got to know it. You are going to be the experts. All right. See you on Tuesday.